It's the tip of the spear in the epic battle to defend the United States of America. The National Security Hour exposes the wolves in sheep's clothing and their nefarious plots to undermine and destroy U.S. national security.
Welcome back to the National Security Hour on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network on iHeartRadio, voice of freedom, the out loud truth. America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best-in-class apps available on Apple, Android, and Alexa. We stream 24/7, and now you can also hear them on the podcast on the same apps. All of our shows go to podcast typically 1 to 2 days after the broadcast is heard live on talk radio. You can hear them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, and iHeart Podcast, and many more. Be sure you subscribe and rate the show, our National Security Hour, on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for the latest news and happenings 24/7. We all must do our part and share the stories, the articles, and the videos so that we can help secure America's future. You can find out more about our show and get all the latest podcasts if you go to the menu nav at the AmericaOutloud.com bar underneath schedule or show. You will be in the know. Your host today is Dr. Michael Scheuer and myself, Colonel Mike. And we're so happy to bring a guest on today, friend of ours, many years from Virginia, retired Virginia Senator Richard Black. Senator Black, welcome to the National Security Hour.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Nice to be here.
Sir, I would like you to give our listeners around the globe, and especially in America, a little bit about your background. We know who you are. We know you're a great patriot. Just give us a little bit of your background for the listener.
Well, I grew up in Miami and joined the Marines, ran out of money to continue going to University of Miami and enlisted and worked my way into a flight training program, flew helicopters in Vietnam. I was one of the first East Coast helicopter pilots. There were two of us who were the first volunteers to go over. The West Coast Marines were already there. And in the end, Mike Carley, a great, great pilot who traveled over with me, was shot in the face and killed while he was trying to fly troops into a hot landing zone. I flew 269 combat missions, mostly out of Chu Lai, Vietnam. And then we were offshore Philippines. We were sailing on Yankee Station, and during the morning briefings in the ready room, they said, "Look, the 1st Marine Division's under heavy attack. We need a volunteer who will go and fight on the ground as a forward air controller, calling in airstrikes, medical evacuations, and so forth." And with my background, I've been through boot camp and infantry training and all. My hand went up. I said, "Yeah, I'll do it." And so after having flown quite intensively in very hot combat, I went to 1st Marine Division and was on about 70 combat patrols and eventually was in the battle that kicked off the bloodiest combat during the Vietnam War for Marines. It was a battle in the Quezon Valley, Union 1 and Union 2. We started the whole thing. Quite fierce combat. And shortly following that, my chief radio man, Henry Smith, we called him Smitty, he and I both volunteered to go out for another patrol to rescue an outfit, and I was wounded, and he was killed right next to me. So it was very hot combat. I understand what combat is, and later on went into the Army JAG Corps. I was a staff judge advocate, which is like a U.S. attorney in several places, Fort Leonard Wood, Fort Ord, California, Fort Lewis, Washington, and eventually was chief of the criminal law division at the Pentagon, where I testified before Congress and advised the Senate Armed Services Committee on major cases. And then got out, was in, I was a partner in a law firm for a number of years, and eventually ran for office. And I have served for 16 years in the Virginia House of Delegates and in the Virginia Senate. And won 12 out of 13 very hotly contested elections, including the last one, which was against a woman who was the wife of FBI agent McCabe, who was the very infamous guy who was involved in all sorts of nefarious acts that have certainly brought the FBI into ill repute. But anyway, that's the background. I've done a lot of work on foreign relations with Syria. Very, very interested in the Ukraine war. And for my efforts, I was declared an enemy of ISIS during the height of their power. There were only three Americans who were ever declared enemies of ISIS. I was one of them. And now, ironically, the Ukrainian government has this Center for Disinformation, which they picked up from our Homeland Security. And so they have labeled me as one of their bad boys, and that's put me on one of their hit lists. So, but I tell them like it is. I know foreign policy, understand it, and I understand war. Like there's probably not a general officer on active duty who has experienced nearly the level of combat that I have.
Well, we salute you on the National Security Hour, Colonel Black. And I wanted to just say this, in past talks with Colonel Black in Virginia, we discussed, and over the phone just recently, a couple of weeks ago, his visit to Syria with President Assad, which is a very interesting conversation. We have enough time to just touch on it before we go to the next segment. But if you'd like to just touch on your trip to Syria, it was very important. It was very enlightening when you came home and you told us what you went and visited and what kind of person President Assad is.
Yeah, I just to kind of sum it up, the United States began embarking on a program designed to overthrow the government of Syria. We started, it goes back to 2005, at least. In 2011, there was this outbreak of violence all across the Mideast. We don't know precisely how much Western intelligence agencies were involved in promoting the disorder, but it certainly was part of a major program to destabilize the Arab world. And Syria was one of those countries that just sort of caught in the middle of all of this stuff. And we began working through the CIA in early 2011, which is when the Syrian civil war broke out. And the CIA landed special operators whose job was to establish communications links with the rebels, who were essentially ISIS, Al-Qaeda terrorists. And there were a whole array of groups that went by various names, but they were all fed into Al-Qaeda. And they just ravaged the country, and they went after Christians in particular, slaughtered a lot of Christians in very brutal fashions. They beheaded people just all over the place, crucified people, burned them alive. These were the people who were being supplied by the United States under secret CIA program Timber Sycamore, which was compromised later. But what we did, we, after invading Libya, we took all of their modern arms, and we shipped them to Turkey, where we established a network of CIA-controlled warehouses, and then we would funnel those weapons across the border to Al-Qaeda and all of its affiliates, including a group called the Free Syrian Army. Ironically, there's nothing free about the Free Syrian Army, except that we gave them free arms and let them behead people and rape people at will. But in any event, I sent a letter to Assad in 2015, the President Assad, and I thanked him for an operation they had conducted in the Kalaman Mountain range separating Syria from Lebanon, and a very skillful operation in which they had cleared Al-Qaeda from the mountain range that had a great number of Christians in that mountain range, and it had been taken over by these people who basically believed that either you converted to Islam or you lost your head and your wife became a slave. So I wrote to him. I said, I want to thank the Syrian Arab Army for its great valor in that battle, and especially for saving the 13 Catholic nuns who had been taken hostage, and they were held as human shields. The Western media had thus far just been a monolithic force against Syria, just accusing them of all kinds of things. It was all rubbish, but it was part of the way that we overthrow these countries. And I finished my letter. I said, I cannot explain to you why the United States, which had 13 Al-Qaeda terrorists fly jets into the Twin Towers and the Pentagon on 9/11, is now, 10 years later, supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria. And the media went berserk. I think they felt like, since I was the first public official ever to honestly disclose what was happening, that they would just crush me into dust and destroy me, and everybody else, and I'd be sort of the example. But in fact, you know, we responded to people. Hundreds of people every day would call in, and I would talk to the ones who were against us, and except for somebody who was an editor at Al Jazeera, publication out of Qatar, which was involved in funneling weapons to ISIS and to Al Qaeda. Not Al Jazeera wasn't, but the government of Qatar was, and he was the only one who was not at least respectful that hey, even though we may disagree, you sure know your stuff. But in any event, that led to me going to Syria in 2016. I met with President Assad, who, by the way, is a very, very bright individual with superb judgment. His wife, it's almost like they came out of a picture book. They sort of look a little bit alike. She's a little more charismatic. He's a little more reserved. But tremendous people, tremendous leaders of that country. And during that visit, I traveled to Palmyra, which had just been liberated from ISIS. ISIS had a vast army, probably several divisions, that crossed 100 miles of open territory. The U.S. coalition, which had all sorts of aircraft at its disposal, decided not to drop a single bomb on this vast ISIS army because we had hoped they would go through Palmyra and then from there continue on to Damascus and have the black and white ISIS flag flying over the capital. But in any event, the Syrian army heroically rescued Palmyra, and I landed there while they were still clearing mines. And from there, I took a heavily armed convoy with very elite troops, and we crossed through ISIS-controlled territory without any warning or anything. We went through. We had air cover. We had a jet aircraft overhead. We had two attack helicopters that were flying security, and we raced from there to Homs City. But in any event, I saw a great deal of what was going on, and later followed up with a trip in 2018, at which time I went to the front lines in Aleppo, which was kind of like the Battle of Stalingrad for Syria. They fought for a number of years, and then finally it reached a tipping point, and they overwhelmed the terrorists in Aleppo and pretty well cleared the country. Unfortunately, they would have been at peace. There would have been peace, prosperity. People would have been mending fences. But the United States got involved with something that we called Plan B.
All right, hold that thought. Senator Black, hold that thought. We're going to be coming up on a break. You're on the National Security Hour with Dr. Michael Scheuer and Colonel Mike. And today's guest is Colonel Senator Richard Black, retired from Virginia. We're speaking about the conflict and what took place in Syria. You want to stay tuned. We're going to come back right after the break. You don't want to miss this. This is very important. You're on AmericaOutloud.com, the National Security Hour. Again, 5 days a week, 7 p.m. And hold that thought, Senator. We'll be back.
Whether you're an independent, a Democrat, or a Republican, one thing remains true. Airborne viruses love us equally. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the advanced nasal solution Cofix RX. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. Spray goodbye to colds and flus with a Cofix RX nasal solution cleanse. That's COFIXRX.com. Save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD at COFIXRX.com.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
Welcome back. You're on the National Security Hour with Dr. Michael Scheuer and Colonel Mike. Today's guest, Colonel Senator Richard Black, retired from Virginia. And we're going to continue the conversation about what took place in Syria. This is really important for the American people to know. We spoke with the Colonel a couple of weeks ago about it. And what you have to know about Syria, and I think a lot of people remember about Iraq, Christians were safe in Syria and they were safe in Iraq with Saddam Hussein. Senator, continue, please. Thank you.
Yes, I was beginning to speak about Plan B. What happened is the Syrian army, basically the whole nation, rose up against these Al-Qaeda terrorists. through all the years of this war, not a single terrorist supported by the U.S. government has ever become a popular figure with the Syrian people. And so the Syrian people and the Syrian army rose up. They drove off these terrorists who had raped and beheaded and crucified them for so many years. And they drove them from almost the entire country in victory after victory. It's very painful, hundreds of thousands of men killed. And then finally they were winning. And what happened is they had an election. The President Assad was reelected, and just overwhelming. Now, it's true, this is a wartime election. It's difficult to have it be quite as free and fair. But frankly, Syria is one of the only ones that has an election. Saudi Arabia doesn't have an election. Kuwait doesn't have an election. These are people who are dictators for life. They call them kings, but they're dictators. But they do have elections in Syria. And so John Kerry flew in, and he was really angry that the terrorists had not won, that the legitimate government of Syria was still standing. So he announced what he called Plan B. I wouldn't say announce exactly. He said, we may have to go to Plan B. Well, what did he mean by Plan B? Plan B was where the United States invaded Syria. We seized control of the northern band of territory. It's a large part of Syria. And we have boots on the ground. Obama, who was one of the most bloodthirsty presidents in American history, a guy who started off.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was, sir.
He started the war in Libya, unprovoked war of aggression in Libya, did it in Syria, continued wars in Iraq and in Afghanistan, he helped the Saudis to invade the Yemen and kill off the poor Houthi tribesmen. Just a bloodthirsty warmonger, if ever there was one. Well, anyway, this Plan B, he had promised the American people a dozen times, no boots on the ground. He said that no boots on the ground. And then we put boots on the ground, we invaded, and we seized a big swath of territory. Now, what was important about northern Syria is that it had two things of vital importance to the country. Under Assad's father, they had created a great breadbasket. They had wheat fields that were very, very lush. The Assad family had installed irrigation. And so they had plenty of wheat to feed all of the country and to export to other countries. So the United States seized the wheat that fed all of the people of Syria. And the plan B, part of it was designed to create a famine, which they did very effectively. The people of Syria are starving today. The children of Syria are starving today. Elderly people are dying of starvation today because American troops occupy the wheat fields and prevent the food from flowing to the people. The other thing that Plan B did, and this is all Obama's doing, he loves this kind of stuff. They seized the oil fields. Now, the oil fields were very important. Syria is not a big oil exporter, but about 70% of its oil, of its export revenues, came from oil. And that was money that went to make sure that pensions are paid and all of these other things. And so we knew if we cut off their oil so that they did not have export revenue. If we cut off the wheat so that they had no food, then they would starve. We also imposed something known as the Caesar sanctions. Now, Caesar was a character who he never disclosed who he was. He came in this shroud and they took him before these congressional committees. And he claimed that he had 50,000 photographs of people who had been murdered in Syrian prisons. I read months after all of this hoopla hit the media that they believed that 9 of those people actually had been in Syrian prisons. But in any event, under Mike Pompeo, when Trump became president, Pompeo was determined to just beat Syria into submission and finish it off once and for all. It was frustrating that we had not been able to beat them into submission.
Hold on 1 second now, Colonel. So in other words, we had the John McCain rebels, the Free Syria guys. Then we had John Kerry come in. And then we had Obama, the Mr. Peaceful President, who killed more Muslims than anybody. And now we have Mike Pompeo in this scenario, who wants to run for president. Continue. Thank you.
Yes. And Pompeo pushed for this for the Caesar sanctions, which were absolutely draconian. And by coincidence, almost immediately after he said he was going to tighten down and put the screws to every poor peasant in Syria. Those weren't his words. Those are my words. But there was suddenly a mysterious explosion in the harbor in the capital of Lebanon, in Beirut.
We remember that. We remember that well. Yes.
And this was a rather odd coincidence. And I don't believe for a minute that this is something that just happened. I suspect that the CIA was behind it. And anyway, it wiped out the banking system of Lebanon, which a lot of Syrians had their life savings, and all of a sudden they didn't have anything. And the effect of these sanctions, the sanctions prevent Syrians from getting ordinary medicines. They cannot get antibiotics. During the COVID hysteria, when we were telling everybody, oh, get shots and do this and do that, the Syrians didn't have anything. We didn't give a rip about human beings. We just wanted to sell pharmaceuticals. But in any event, we've got this situation where a woman in Syria, a poor woman in Syria who develops breast cancer, cannot get the medications and the treatment that are so effective in curing it. We just let them die. We know they're dying. We know that they're dying because of our sanctions, and we don't give a rip. It's sort of the nature of the U.S. State Department, the CIA, is these are people without heart, without morals, without God. All they care about is power and money, and they don't care who stands in their way.
Is that part of that spreading democracy in the Middle East program, you think?
That's exactly part of it, because nobody wants what we have. So uh-huh. if you're going to give it to them, you're going to have to force it on them. And probably in the process, you'll kill 30-40% of the country and destroy its infrastructure.
You know what was great, Dick? Before the war in Syria, they happened, I don't know if you saw some of the Wall Street Journal articles at the time. They were advanced so far that their, let's say, pit stops like we have on the interstates where you go in and get a burger and some fuel, they were high end. They were almost like having Tyson's Mall on the highway. It was amazing what the development was going on just before they took them down. You know, and again, I want to repeat that Syria did not kill Christians. Christians were safe in Damascus. Christians were safe in Iraq. Why did we do this? Continue, please, sir.
Yeah. Well, it's been quite a hideous thing. I, I'll just give you one example, and this is a town in Latakia, and this is just one incident of a thousand in this war. But keep in mind that the people who did it are U.S.-backed terrorists, and there's a quiet Christian village. They had a few Muslims, but mostly Christians, and there was a school, and the children were being taught, and all of a sudden there were several truckloads of Al-Qaeda linked terrorists who came into the town, and they went through the town. They ravaged the town. They seized and killed many of the teachers, and they went through the town just systematically beheading Christians. We know all of the details because there was one Muslim man who was close to the Christians, and he survived because one of the terrorists knew him, and the terrorist said, "Oh, this is so and so." He said, "I know him. He's a good Muslim," and so with some reluctance, the others said, "Okay, well, we'll be hands off with that guy." In any event. After all of this bloodletting, that afternoon, there was a group of young Christian teachers who, these were all women, and they were proctors for an examination at the school that was to be held. They didn't know what had happened in the town. They had a little school bus, and the school bus came into town, pulled up, and as soon as it opened the doors, These animals rushed on. They grabbed the women, seized them, dragged them, kicking and screaming, off the bus. They stripped them naked. They marched them to the center square, where they tied them up to poles, and they gang raped them in the course of all of this. I don't know whether it was before or after they put them on the poles. Just repeatedly raped them all through the day. All of the terrorists raped them. And then as they had them tied up, they took machetes and they began cutting pieces off of them. And eventually they cut them into, smaller pieces, which they then threw into the river. Now, the reason for throwing them into the river is that they had some kind of a religious belief that if they were thrown in the river, then God could never find their souls to recoup that. This is just a snapshot of the character of the people that we employed, the CIA and the U.S. State Department employed, to overthrow the legitimate, duly elected government of Syria. And it's unfortunately, it's all too characteristic of the way we do business. And I think if the American people could see what we do abroad, they would be so aghast that even the most liberal, the most woke person would say, "Oh yeah, that's really over the top."
You know, Senator, we always say, Mike and I always say, our biggest enemies abroad, and Mike and I traveled extensively abroad over our years, is the State Department, is our consulates. It's the first face of America that you see when you want to come to America to get a visa. And the attitude and the just the way they react to the people in the host country is so blatantly, it's terrible. Like you take, let's say a student comes to Virginia, right? He goes to school 2-3 years. His parents want to come in for the graduation in Northern Virginia, let's say Vienna, whatever, Tyson's. They deny the family a visa based on, you know, one error, they checked the box wrong or something on the application. And it's such a nice, polite, do not reapply again letter. In other words, you're blacklisted. We don't want you back. This has happened. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases, just Northern Virginia. And now the Congress, how they react, years ago, the Congress used to be able to call up an ambassador, or, you know, fax an ambassador and say, hey, what's going on? Let this thing pass. Today, you know what the congressional people from America in the House of the Congress, they will say, we have no power over the ambassador. There's nothing we can do to help you. So why the hell are you allowing children to come in, students to come in, spend tens up to $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 on an education, right? And that money goes into the community in your cities and states, and yet you deny their parents to come for a graduation. This is our State Department. This is our U.S. consulates. They make us the enemy of the world just by showing up to get a visa.
You know, it wasn't always this way. I was a judge advocate officer. I was a lieutenant colonel in Germany during the Cold War in the early 80s. And I can remember I was trying to get a space available hop to return to the States. And I was having a little trouble getting out. And I looked at the list, and there were lots of flights going to Amman, Jordan, to Riyadh, different places in the Arab world. And I thought, you know, if I had a few extra days, I would love to just go there and just, you know, rent a motorcycle and go from country to country. And back then you could have done it. It was peaceful. It was friendly. The people got along well. Now I was responsible at one of my duties. I ran five legal offices. They were branches of the 21st Support Command. And I was responsible for five of them and three.
All right, hang on to that thought. We're going to be coming up on another commercial. We're on with Senator Black, retired from Virginia. You're on with Dr. Michael Scioia, Colonel Mike, on America Out Loud Network. You're on the National Security Hour, 5 days a week, 7 p.m. And you can get us on AmericaOutLoud.com. Voice of freedom, voice of truth, voice of liberty. Don't forget, 5 days a week, National Security Hour. We'll be back.
Here we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. AmericaOutLoud.com. 7 amazing years. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited-time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-term effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. Fortunately, Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula with the miracle enzyme natokinase, scientifically studied to dissolve spike protein so you can feel your very best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Welcome back to the National Security Hour on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network, voice of freedom, the out loud truth, with liberty and justice for all. Marhaba. Welcome back. This is the final segment with Dr. Michael Scioia, Colonel Mike, and our guest today, Senator Richard Black of Virginia. Welcome back, Senator.
Thank you.
Continue, please. Thank you.
Yes. I was just beginning to contrast our foreign policy and the way that it worked in the Middle East under Ronald Reagan, a great president in the 80s, and what it has become under the two Bushes, under Clinton, under Obama, and now under Biden. And the United States was very highly respected under Ronald Reagan. And he didn't do it by running around swinging a big caveman club over his head and smashing people with it. There was diplomacy. There was consideration of other nations' interests and that type of thing. There was an understanding that there were limits to American power and what we could achieve and what we couldn't. And so at that time, I was responsible for military justice matters arising in the Mideast and Africa. And it was located. We didn't have many troops there back then. Mostly they were people who were in the embassies. But from time to time, things would happen. And I personally attended to each one of them. So I would interact with an embassy in Egypt, an embassy in Saudi Arabia. And I ran across a little note that was sent to the Judge Advocate General complimenting me on my diplomacy and interacting with the embassy staffs and quietly resolving things that had become problematic. And it sort of contrasts with today, because back then we were sensitive to what these other nations' concerns were, and we tried to do things with some delicacy. Today, we just simply go in with tanks and guns blazing and kill everybody. But in those days, the Mideast was peaceful. People were looking forward to the next generation having a better life, having perhaps a little more freedom. And they had achieved in Syria. The Syrian constitution is the model for the Middle East. They guarantee women's rights, equality under the law for women. They guarantee religious freedom in three different places in the Syrian constitution, because I've read the constitution. But of all things, throughout the war, the people we have chosen to criticize the Syrian constitution have been the Saudi Arabians. And the Saudi Arabians would say, oh, what an outrage this is. They don't have they never say exactly what they didn't like, but they just didn't like the constitution. Well, Saudi Arabia doesn't have a constitution. And here they are criticizing the inadequacies that they claim in the Syrian constitution. And it's like scripture says, before you criticize the speck in your brother's eye, take the beam out of your eye. This is sort of the classic situation. Saudi Arabia, whose crown prince can, on any day of the week say, give me 80 prisoners. I want them out here. I want to behead them today. And he does that from time to time. We don't have that in Syria. It doesn't work that way. So, it's imperfect. We're imperfect. They're imperfect. All countries are imperfect. But they certainly had a constitution that was a model for the entire Arab world. There is no superior constitution in the Middle East. So it just shows you can have a great and powerful president like Ronald Reagan, who acts with some prudence, some moderation, with a sense of diplomacy, with the respect for other leaders in other countries. And the United States can be very powerful and very influential. But we're in the process of a totally different paradigm where we just go about overthrowing this nation, that nation, and we don't care how many people we kill. And I think the world is kind of getting fed up with it, and we're starting to lose the preeminence of the dollar because we force all the world's nations. We decree you will embargo Syria. You will embargo Russia. You'll embargo this one and that one. And all of a sudden they say, wait a minute, we're a sovereign nation. Are you really saying what you mean? And we say, yes, you give up your sovereignty to us. You will respect our sanctions, or we'll come in and we'll bomb you, or we'll do some other bad thing to you. And so what's happening? This great power that we had with the U.S. dollar being king dollar is still king dollar, but we see the Chinese have established bilateral trade in the two countries' currencies.
Without firing a shot, sir,
Without firing a shot. They have agreements with 60 nations now, including Saudi Arabia, Brazil, and a list that goes on as long as your arm. Now, they haven't had to invade countries and overthrow them and assassinate people. They kind of take them as they find them, and they cut good business deals.
They bribe them to death, Dick. And, you know, we just talked about the other day with Mike. It's amazing that we're telling the Saudis what they should do with the Iranians and the Chinese when the Bidens are the best partners of the Chinese. You know, we're telling them, hey, you know, what are you doing over it? We just sent the other day, we sent the new CIA director, William Burns. He's very upset with Saudi Arabia. He flew in unnoticed, just took a flight and said, I got to talk to these Saudi Arabians. Oh, really? I mean, listen, it's their backyard. If they want to be friends with Iran, they want to be friends with whoever, it's their backyard. Remember who sent $1.3 billion over to Iran? You remember that, Senator Black? Obama.
Yeah. Yeah,
pallets of cash, and we have some nerve to talk. What do you say, Mike?
Oh, I think it's, you know, one thing I would say, Senator, is that unfortunately, our experience in the Middle East has been shaped by an infection called Israel. We have supported every outrage they've done against the Palestinians, and the Palestinians are far from blameless. But we are now. After all the times we've tried to create peace, we are now the Israelis writ large. We just go and kill. And as a former, you know, judge advocate, there must be something that a military officer can refuse to do if someone who tells him to seize wheat crops that feed a country and also feed other countries, or any kind of that, you know, supporting terrorists for the CIA. There must be some that just doesn't seem possible. But it happens. It happens too often. Mm-hmm. And your idea that we're increasingly in the CIA, in the military, in other places, without God, without morals, you can look at the people who became civil servants during the two Biden Obama administrations. They were sent to these agencies especially for that reason. They were without God. They were without morals. They had generally some kind of a prior narcotics problem or a sexual deviancy, and they could be counted on to do what they were told, because on the one side they got into organizations that it would never have let them in. In Reagan's era, or maybe even in Trump's era, I don't know. But you have a whole bureaucracy now, and just not the security agencies, but people who will follow orders no matter what they are.
Yeah, you know, When Trump took over the presidency, he had this tremendous respect for generals. He was just impressed by generals. And, you know, and a lot of Americans were that way. What he did not realize, much to his detriment, was that these generals that we have today, these were not generals like you had when Ronald Reagan was in office. These are generals who rose through the ranks by being woke, by being politically correct, by being racist in some cases, by being sexual deviants in others. And when this goes on, it started under Bill Clinton, and then it continued during all the Obama years. There was an ideological screen. And if you were a Christian, I mean, if you were a genuine practicing Christian, you were kind of on the outs. You were viewed as kind of a white supremacist type of person. But if you were, you know, homosexual, if you were a lesbian, you got moved to the top, to the front of the pack. And it just, you know, it reached a point where you had Obama during his presidency having the White House bathed in the rainbow sodomy colors.
Yeah.
He ordered the rainbow sodomy flag flown over U.S. embassies as a way of just pushing a sharp stick in the eye of all the nations of the world, decreeing that, you know, you will either submit, you know, abandon God, submit to this rule of sodomy, or something bad's going to happen to you.
Well, if you walk the halls of Congress today, Senator Black, right in the halls of Congress, you could see the rainbow flag. You can see all kind of BLM flags outside the offices of the congressional, including the very own Virginia's own Don Beyer. Don Beyer, congressman of Northern Virginia, right in the districts where we used to come from, Mike and I. And yeah. By the way, you represented Loudoun when you were in the Congress and the Senate, correct?
Yeah, it was an interesting place. When I finished, I was representing 250,000 people. And it throughout the 16 years, it had been either the first or second or third fastest growing county out of 3,000 counties. This one was fastest growing. And
now it's one of the most prosperous, the top 10 in America.
It has long been the county with the highest per capita income, very sophisticated, very highly educated, and yet I was clearly the most conservative member of the House and the Senate.
Yes.
During this period, and somehow I managed to make that work out through enormous effort on our part. When I finally retired from the Senate after many grueling years of fighting the battles, it's like the whole state just sort of lost its backbone. And
yeah, it went from red to purple, and now it's pretty much blue in all the major areas. We're down to the last couple of minutes. On the National Security Hour, you're on with Dr. Michael Scioia, Colonel Mike. Our guest today is Senator Richard Black, also a colonel from the military, retired. And this is just a great conversation we're having. Remember, AmericaOutloud.com, 24/7, where you come for the news. And don't forget, it's the voice of freedom, the out loud truth, with liberty and justice for all. 7 o'clock East Coast time, Monday to Friday, the National Security Hour, with military and intel experts. We're going to give the final couple of minutes to Dr. Scioia and Colonel Mike and Colonel Black. You can go first.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I wanted to just very quickly summarize something that's recently in the news, where there was a soldier convicted at the at the whim of the Soros supported DA in Austin, Texas. And it was a clear case of self-defense. But he was prosecuted anyway. And what had happened is that during the BLM Antifa riots, he was an Uber driver, and he was trying to get his car out of the way of this big, massive protest, very violent protest. And he began trying to weave through these people who were unlawfully blocking the street. Finally, they stopped him. They jumped in front of him, and he was forced to stop. And they surrounded the car. They began to pound it with their fists. And then there was this one fellow. Now, both the Mr. Perry, the soldier, and Mr. Foster, who was the person who was killed, they're both white. But this fellow Foster was part of the Black Lives Matter Antifa riots, and he was carrying a loaded AK-47 with 30 rounds in the magazine. And with all of this turmoil, people shoving on the car and pounding on it, you had this poor Uber driver, and then this guy, this very radical, woke individual, comes up, and he's holding the rifle at the ready, sort of like we did on patrol in the jungles in Vietnam, where he's got his finger on a trigger, he's got his hand on the hand grip.
And 1 minute, Senator, 1 minute. Go ahead.
In any event, so the Uber driver pulls the pistol, shoots him, kills him. And the jury convicted the Uber driver of murder. But the bottom line is, when people surround a car, block it, and then come up and they poke a loaded rifle in your face, then they do so at their peril, and he deserved what he got. He got shot. And fortunately, Governor Abbott is going to grant pardon.
Great. That's good news. I want to thank our guest, Senator Richard Black, retired from Virginia. And thank you for joining us on the mission. The National Security Hour is the tip of the spear in the epic battle to defend the United States of America.